Dellingpod with me, James Dellingpole. I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but before we meet him and discover he's not a special guest after all, and let's have an ad, a new ad, I hope. I hope by the time I put this out, I've recorded some new ads. You may have noticed that gold has been doing pretty well recently. In the last year, I think it's increased in value in sterling terms by around 50%. And if you'd bought gold when I first started recommending it on adverts like this, you would have certainly more than doubled your money. Now, a lot of you are probably thinking, is it too late? Have I missed the boat? Well, I can't definitively answer that question. Nobody can. But if I had to guess, I would say gold has got some way to go. And yeah, sure, there's going to be corrections, but you really ought to be owning physical gold for lots and lots of, not paper gold, obviously. You should be owning physical gold. Now, there are two ways of owning gold. Either you can actually own it, keep it in a vault or in your own home. There are risks, obviously, with keeping it in your own home. You know, what if burglars come, whatever. The problem with keeping it in a vault is that you then get paid a storage fee. But there is another way of owning physical gold and actually getting paid interest on it, unusually. And that is with a company that I've recommended before, and I use them myself. They're called Monetary Metals. Monetary Metals lets you earn a yield on your gold, paid in gold. Right now, you can earn up to 4% annual yield paid in physical gold ounces, not dollars or pounds. Instead of just storing gold and paying vault fees, your gold actually earns more gold over time. Monetary Metals connects gold owners with real productive businesses like refiners or jewelers that lease the gold. That's how they can pay interest, by the way. So they lease the gold and they pay yields back in gold. This is a way to compound your wealth in ounces of gold. There are no storage or insurance fees charged while your metal is earning yield. You can open an account with 10 ounces of gold and start earning yield right away. You stay in control, deploy how much of your gold you want into lease opportunities. In today's inflationary environment, saving in paper currency means losing purchasing power. Earning in gold means growing your real wealth. Go to the link in the description below, or go to monetary-metals.com/dellingpole/ to learn more about how to participate and start earning a return on honest money again with Monetary Metals. Welcome, guest who's not a special guest, Dick.
Hello. Hello. Happy New Year to our listeners.
Is this
for those who only listen to the Dick and James version of the show? I'm sure there's millions.
Actually, you're probably right. There probably are the really discerning ones. Just don't bother. Like,
only
why?
Today I had someone contacted me on Twitter saying, why don't you do more Dick and James? I really love them. And I mean, I suppose we could do more, but, you know, it is more better.
Yes, probably.
Is it?
I think we probably should do more. Because then we get to talk more, because as you know, and I know, we only really talk on the podcast.
We made a mistake the other day, didn't we?
We did.
which we will have to explain.
I think we should. I love the way that you, I was going for a treatment with the wonderful Michelle, who's treated so many Dellingpod listeners now.
All around the world.
All around Ecuador, Norway, Portugal. I mean, they come from it all over.
Yep.
Anyway, I had booked a slot to see Michelle to sort of deal with my various accumulated horse injuries and such
which
like.
Which means you travelling to my home city from yours, which is a good hour and 20 minimum.
It is. But it gives me time to go through my Psalms. Mm. I don't listen to podcasts anymore. I just do the Psalms in my head. I thought, this is nice. I'll see Michelle again. She'll make me my turmeric latte like she always does. But instead, I got this message from Dick. I've got to read it, because you put it really well, in a very dickish fashion, and I couldn't say no. You said, hello, brother. I completely shagged my back this morning doing the very exercise I taught you to do. Yeah, so you're trying to sabotage me. Something popped and I went down like a sack of very painful spuds. I contacted Michelle Natch and she said the only time she has is you sparing a bit of your time, which I think is very good of you. Well, obviously, I didn't go. No, Dick, I want you to suffer. I let you have half my
session. Well, you know what back suffering is like.
I do.
No turmeric latte.
I know totally what back pain is like.
You will do anything to sort out back pain. And at times like these, my heart goes out to our dear sister's partner who suffers chronic back pain. So, you know, we know how bad a life he has on the pain front. Anyway, I was, as you pointed out, I was doing the very exercise I taught you only days before. You're sitting on an invisible chair with your back against a wall,
yes,
with your legs making a 90-degree angle, and then you lift one leg up in front of you to completely straighten it. Now, it's good for the back, it's good for the knees, it's a skiing exercise, so it's a legit thing, and I've been.
I don't know
it.
About the detail where you lift up your legs, where you straighten one leg.
You straighten one leg, not both of them, because that.
By the way, Dick, does your imagine? I bet your imaginary chair has this kind of protuberance in the middle.
Would you? No, it doesn't.
Does it have,
no.
giant black Russian imaginary black Russian dildo?
No, it doesn't.
All right. Well, because
I'd have collapsed onto it if that had happened. So I'm doing this exercise post swim on this time last week on the Friday.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was a puppet and I had one of my strings suddenly cut and I just went and something went snap and I was in screaming agony on the floor all alone in this changing room in the pool. And yeah, I stole some of your Michelle time, and she kind of put me right.
And I sat in the room making helpful comments.
Very helpful, helpful. Yeah, and so I took half of your session time, and I'm much much better now. I'm back at the pool. I'm swimming, and but the day, I hurt myself the Friday morning, and I still had to do a half day's work at work. So I went into the office at my worst, literally walking into the office like this. I mean, they think I'm old there anyway. I've got colleagues who I swear are younger than some of my older T-shirts and ones I still wear. And obviously, they think I'm old anyway, so they were laughing at me. And Michelle had said in her messages, apart from you are coming to see me, treat it with a cold pack on your back, so ice or what have you. And at work, you're limited as to what you can do. You're not going to have a bag of frozen peas in the freezer at work. What I did find, though, was a Calippo ice cream left over from the summer that someone had just left in there. Now, you know the shape they are. They're a truncated tube shape. So they're clipped at the bottom. So flat at the bottom, and they go out into a tube. Now, I thought that will do. So I held it against my back, thinking that's perfect. But it needs to balance. So I dropped it down the back of my pants. And hey presto, the narrow end wedges between your ass cheeks really conveniently, as if to grip it, because otherwise it would just slide straight down into your pants. And so I had this really quite good makeshift back cooler, and I was really pleased with myself. They couldn't believe it at work. They said, "What's Rich doing? He's sticking ice creams up his ass." It's like he's a mad old man. But it really did work. But then it kind of started to melt and the top came off and I had sort of sticky lemonness going into my ass crack, and it wasn't so good then. But it definitely saw me through the morning.
We could... I sense a business opportunity here. I think there's a gap in the market. If we brought out a range of ass
lollies.
Well... Yeah,
ice lolly.
You see, you're the marketing guy.
It writes itself. Maybe you should speak to Calippo, whoever makes them. It's going to be Walls or someone like that.
I don't
about
think
sponsorship.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't go for it because I think it's they wouldn't want the association with arses, and also they have ingredients that you don't want up your bottom, like sugar. And
it wasn't up, to be fair. It was just around.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a very useful tip for people who find themselves with back trouble in their office, which has not got back.
There is no ice pack. Calippo. Yeah.
So that was why when you were telling me this story, as you were being treated by Michelle, I said, don't. Oh, it's too late. You'd already told the story.
Yep. Yep.
I think my reactions might have been better.
We have to allow for the fact that every once in a while we are going to have to talk to each other face to face and it not recorded. But like, you know, when I visited you in the new year, there's going to be little golden moments that will be lost forever.
You did.
And we had a lovely, lovely country walk, an evening one and a morning one.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And you actually did some child entertainment.
You for your delightful 6-year-old grandchild. Girl. And I played Sylvanian families in your Victorian doll's house.
It is a good Victorian doll's house.
It's about the size of probably a lot of our listeners' actual houses. It's the big old thing, isn't it?
It is big. It is big. But you need it to accommodate the various furniture and appurtenances.
And the vast amount of Sylvanian families that there are.
I have to say, when I was playing with those Sylvanian families, my thought was, we need more. We need the entire...
Well, you know what it was sadly lacking, don't you?
Badgers.
Badgers. There was no badger family.
Were your favourites the otter family?
Definitely. Far and away, the otters are the best looking of those.
They are.
The ones that were there. I liked the mole. I wasn't so keen on the cat and dog type ones. And there was a frog in there that was just...
I don't
rubbish.
Know what the frogs are doing. They don't make. They're quite hard to dress and undress. Did you find that?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't involved in the dressing and undressing. Your granddaughter was, and she was, you know, in no time whipping the pants off a frog and putting them on a badger. Couldn't have been badger.
Did you notice something about
cat
about females?
I think this is.
Well. It's always good to be reminded that they are a completely different species. Yeah. And when you see them young, and compare and contrast with the males of the species, you realize how different they are. And what I found...
I think you and I both went through this. On having daughters, we thought, what a great opportunity this is to study the opposite sex and see what makes them tick. And having made your own, you think, well, I will study and learn.
Yeah.
By the time they're, what, three? You've lost track. It's sort of like you cannot fathom them. There is no understanding of them.
No, there's not. But I think you do learn certain things about them. And one is that they love bossing men around. From the earliest age, that they know it's their job to boss you around and tell you off and to tell you what to do. So when we had to play, listeners, viewers, we won't bore on about children forever. We'll move on. But we'll move on to conspiracy theories or something. When we had to play various Harry Potter games, and I got to choose whether I would be Harry Potter or whether I'd be Ron, because she obviously was Hermione. And whenever I tried to ad lib or to kind of create scenarios that weren't in her plan, I was very quickly brought to heel. I told, no, you cannot speak until I will tell you what to say. So, yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. Which is interesting, but quite boring as well. Because playing with small children is both very interesting what you learn, also quite incredibly dull.
Yeah, I mean, when you said I was off to sort of do Doll's House stuff, as my own wife pointed out, well, you never played Doll's House with our daughter, and I was like, well, I don't remember ever having to. But I don't know how to do it. And so we set about getting all the children into one of the rooms, into making it into a dormitory, putting them in their little beds, then working out whether the intermediately aged children could hang out with the adults or not. And we decide by looking at them how old they were they allowed to be up this late at night. And that's
interesting.
The games write themselves. It's quite interesting. As you say, it's interesting and deathly dull at the same time. I just wanted to be downstairs with you lot.
I do wonder whether children shouldn't be on their own without having us around being bored, whether they shouldn't just be allowed to make their own entertainment and to learn to be bored and to learn to fantasize about, to create their own worlds.
Well, you and I come from a family with, well, three children, so we were never alone. So, you know, who knows what it's like being an only child apart from an only child?
It's certainly true that whenever I was, if one ever threatened to get bored, one could always just like attack Dick, hurt Dick, or annoy Helen or whatever. Or no, she'd annoy us, wouldn't she? And then,
well, I don't know.
She'd
play us off against each other, and there were sometimes it was me and her against you, and other times it was you and her against me, and alliances, and yeah, it was never calm.
But not being rude to our lovely parents. But do you remember them being around very much?
Not an awful lot.
No.
I don't know what they were doing, but they, you know, I think their mother was playing tennis or squash, and
probably
Pa was running his business.
I mean, they'd probably get upset if they saw this, but luckily they're not going to watch it.
A bit like our wives, we can say what we like here.
Yeah,
no, it'll never get back to them.
Oh, imagine the horror.
Yeah,
if they, I don't know, if like on Clockwork Orange, they had their eyes pinned open, and they
propped
had
open,
propped open. They were forced to watch.
Yeah,
it would be the end of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, thank you, wives.
We're both very confident that simply won't happen. So,
no.
Long may that last.
But maybe this is really unfair. I do not remember our parents being there. Except on family holidays where they couldn't escape. Well, even on family holidays, they could escape us because they brought along another family with children so that we could often play with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the way to do things. I don't think parents should be around.
It's a Victorian approach to parenting, isn't it? You know, have them scrubbed up and presented to you in the evening before they go to bed, and ask them how they're getting on at school, and off they go.
Yeah,
very civilized.
Yeah, but you tell that to I noticed that my eldest son's parenting, I mean, as in the father of granddaughter, is way more hands on than we ever were. Do you think it's a generational thing? It's just
Every generation is either reacting badly against the upbringing they had. Like if they had a super liberal upbringing, they might go super authoritarian, or they're taking the best of what they felt worked for them. But clearly, it's not working because every generation is more foul than the last, it seems.
All I know is that if you ask my children how my parenting was, they would tell you it was really, really shit, and that their memories, they claim.
Yeah, compared to what?
All unhappy.
They got to compare it to.
No, right, exactly. I think they just, anyway. Children are horrible. Don't have them, everybody, if you haven't already.
If we're moving on to conspiracy theories, as you hinted at. I noticed that you put up on your Twitter feed the other day a bit of algorithm code that someone had sent you.
I found that
fascinating.
Tell me what you found fascinating about it. Tell us what it said, first of all.
In your tweet, you said that this was the code that was basically James Dellingpole in a nutshell as far as the algorithm was concerned, and all the exclusions and the summaries of your allegiances. It had things like the fact that you don't go over the line legally, but you have certain opinions that make you unsavory. And it also hinted that you are therefore restricted on the amount of replies that it was going to allow you, that there were restrictions in place, that you were going to be choked at some
point.
Didn't
it say 95% choked? I think it actually gave
a figure. I didn't read that far into it, but it definitely says that you are on a limited feedback setting, which kind of makes the paying for premium a bit of a joke. If you're paying for premium, you should be unfettered on that front. But no, you're paying and they're still choking you, which is why I don't pay anymore for it. I thought, well, there's no point in doing this. So you can get some sort of service if you get hacked again?
No, because I forgot to cancel. I'm just too lazy to cancel. I can't remember why I paid, but like, I'm sure
it'd be good to have the edit button so you can go and you know, check that one word that you accidentally put in that everyone's jumping you on.
Oh, can you not edit if you're
You can't edit if you haven't got a tick.
Right.
I mean, it was never about the monetization. I've never received a penny from anything I've done on Twitter. I'm not nearly high turnover enough to do that. I think people mistakenly think that if you've got a blue tick, you are earning if you manage to generate enough likes. A lot of people do.
One thing I've noticed, and one of the many ways Twitter's got worse, is the number of accounts that whore themselves for traffic. Is it engagement farming and stuff like that? That there are all these tricks that people use to, or these accounts which tell you interesting things about the world, and you're kind of lured into them.
Like an account just called Wisdom. And it's got something vaguely provocative that you just want to click on. I certainly wouldn't fall for any of the, which one of these is the perfect steak? You know, the sort of James Melville type sort of engagement farming. But a lot of them are slightly more out there, like what do you notice? You know, it's a picture of maybe... Macron's husband, and it's sort of like you're meant to go, I don't know, prominent Adam's apple, large ball sack, I don't know. It's like, what are we supposed to notice in this picture? You tell me what I'm supposed to notice.
Yes,
but no, that's engagement farming as well, and it's deeply annoying.
Those ones really annoy me, particularly the ones that most annoy me of all are the ones which show footage of 9/11. And it says, what do you see?
And you think,
I really don't know. Am I supposed to see dancing Israelis in the background? Am I supposed to see a directed energy weapon? Am I supposed...
George Bush going, wah!
Just tell me. Tell me what I'm supposed to see.
Tell me what I'm seeing.
Yeah, because I haven't got time for this kind of conspiracy shit. I want it laid out.
I've got 3 seconds to allocate to every tweet I look at before I make myself a cup of coffee. I am not going to waste 6 seconds on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've lost me.
I don't know why I bother. Given if I am being deboosted,
that's 95%. The word I think I'm probably looking for. Deboosted.
Deboosted.
Choked is good as well, though.
Choked. Yeah. If I'm being choked, why? Why am I honestly don't know why I'm on Twitter except because I like the dopamine hit occasionally when I'm not looking at my Telegram. And these things are all a waste of time. Why do I have a Telegram?
Yeah, but I think you start taking away all of them one by one and your reach is severely diminished. I mean, it's there will be those who only hear about you because of Twitter. I mean, I've sold my paintings and stuff via Twitter. I've got people to start attending church via Twitter. I've got people to come along to see my band via Twitter. So I can't, for something that is effectively not costing me anything now, it's quite good value for that sort of thing. And it's the feeling that you're potentially in touch with, well, in my case, 60,000 people, you twice as much. So I think you've got to think about how much duller life would be without it.
Yes, but how much purer.
Yeah, I can go for pure when I become a Greek Orthodox monk.
Are you
ain't ever going to happen? Because are you a hard those monk? Guys are hardcore.
Mm? I was going to ask you. I don't want to talk to you about this stuff unless you're a higher monk.
A higher monk.
Yeah.
I don't even know what a higher monk is.
I think it's presumably higher monk rather than hero monk. Well, maybe it's a hero monk.
H-I-E-R.
Oh, yeah. Hero
monk. No, where did you encounter this? And
obviously in that book I gave you.
Well, I'm nearly at the end of that, but
no, not that one.
Not that one. The other one.
The other one.
Which I'll be reading next. Yeah. I'm so near the end of this one. You can see that where my bookmarker is. That's how close to the end. I absolutely loved this book. And I've been recommending it on my Twitter feed. It's mind-blowing. If at the end of it you don't think you're not sorely tempted to go Greek Orthodox, then I don't know what to say.
It's you don't come out at the end thinking, would you better say what the title of the book is, because people couldn't see it.
It's the Gurus, the Young Man, and the Elder Paisios.
Yeah.
Who is was an incredible monk on Mount Athos, who is now a saint. Just everyday miracles, just an absolutely incredible guy. People would walk in to visit him, and he'd tell them their name, their problems, why they had come, where they had come. He knew everything about you the moment you walked in, and not in a sort of creepy way.
Yes. When I went to see him, he knew me really well.
Do you think you might have been on Mount Athos at the same time as him?
Yes, I do. I could theoretically have met him, but I don't recall having done so. But yeah,
he's out in. There's lots of variations on how they live on Mount Athos, isn't it? Some are in little hermitages, and some are in the bigger monasteries. And he's in the former. He's in a little cell, which is a hut out in the woods on his own sort of thing, isn't he? So, yeah, he's more isolationist.
I probably didn't meet him, but it would be a good lie. Although the scriptures do enjoin against lying, so maybe that wouldn't be such a good thing. But it would be quite annoying.
Not encouraged.
But it would be a good piece of one-upmanship to go, yeah, he was great. Saint, as I must now learn to call him, although back then we just used to call him Elder.
Yes. Isn't it weird how when we were growing up, say, take us back to prep school, when we were told about Catholicism, for instance, and how they have lots of saints, and they were saying, I think, about how Mother Teresa was going to become a saint, and we were, how do you become a saint? Oh, they have to prove that you've performed at least two miracles, and then they vote on it. And it's like, miracles, really? You think miracles are real? And, you know, I don't know how I got so cynical so young, but the idea that miracles are anything other than a sort of made-up thing seemed just ridiculous to me. But reading this book, it's miracles are the norm. They're completely commonplace. You know, being healed from incurable diseases, and knowing what's going on in your mind without saying anything, being able to communicate with people on the other side of the world in an instant. It's you start to accept the level of woo that is actually going on out there is way, way higher than ever you dared to believe.
That is essentially the quotation that appears at the beginning of the other book that you haven't read yet, Everyday Saints.
Okay.
Which I don't want to bang about too much, because I've mentioned it before, but that is the theme of Everyday Saints, that proper Christians are aware that miracles happen all around us all the time. And they're quite kind of comfortable with the idea. But most people in this secularized culture, this post-Enlightenment culture, think that this is kind of medieval superstition, that of course miracles don't happen, they're not rational, they're not real. And so it's if you've got a mind closed to the possibility that these things are real, then you're never gonna see them.
I mean, it's one of the things I quite liked about the Church of England. We know we don't go for all that miracle nonsense. We accept that if it couldn't have happened, it probably didn't happen. And that's why we don't have lots of saints in the C of E. And it's sort of it's completely the opposite of what is actually going on.
Yeah.
And another reason I'm glad to be out of the C of E, like I need enough reasons.
Well, I'm about to get deeper into the C of E because I'm about to join the parish committee, whatever it is, the PCC. Is it PCC? The committee that sort of runs the church. So the vicar obviously turns up to the meetings. And the church warden is there, and the treasurer, and the secretary. And in order for any church to operate, you have to have a PCC, or PPC, PCC, well, whatever.
Right, it's the thing that you're on.
And the thing I'm going to join anyway, and the reason I'm joining is because sadly, two of the committee of four died over Christmas. So they kind of need new blood. And I mean,
that's a lovely turn of phrase.
Yeah, well, you look at the size of the congregation, and you think we really can't afford to lose right. members. But unfortunately, it happens because
We have discussed this. I mean, there's me about to head into my local Orthodox church, and you saying there is no point in me doing it because in your situation, you've got some lovely traditional conservative small c parish churches near you that aren't remotely woke or full of nonsense. You're not going to get a Bewitched concert going on in your church as we're having in Worcester Cathedral, for instance.
What's wrong with all the band named after black magic appearing in the cathedral?
It's madness, isn't it? But you're...
Yeah, well, they're playing later on, I gather.
The situation you're in, I'd probably do the same as you. I'd probably throw myself into the local church because it's not like it's Antichrist. It's just my analogy that C of E is skimmed milk. Catholicism might be semi-skimmed milk, and Orthodoxy is whole milk.
Oh yeah, yeah. If I happen to live on Mount Athos, so I'd probably be
you'd be searching around. Where is the local?
Where's my local
church?
Yeah, exactly. You'd have a choice, wouldn't you? You'd have Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, Orthodox.
Yeah.
Every version, as long as it's Orthodox.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that there's going to be lots of Catholics listening to this who are the same, who feel the same. Particularly the Latin Mass Catholics, they're going to be thinking, yeah, we know the Pope is the Antichrist, or we know that the Pope is an anti-Pope. We've got nothing to do with the Church hierarchy. We just like doing a Catholic ritual. In the same way, I don't feel when I go to church on Sundays, or when I have my bell ringing classes, lessons, when I'm reading the lesson, I don't feel any connection at all with the church hierarchy. It does not exist. It's just our church doing the Book of Common Prayer, which is written for us by Cranmer and others, and that's. That's all I need, and then you've got these hymns that were written for you over, particularly in the 19th century, and there are one or two bangers that we all know, and
I will certainly miss all
16th
that
16th century I'll... communion cup, silver, yeah. So it's all there.
Yeah, no, I think each to their own, and it's lovely that we've all headed off in our different directions, and we're getting what we can from what we have around us. And I'm very lucky to have an 11th century church offering Greek Orthodox worship in my neighborhood. You know, it's a 5-minute drive away. Yeah.
Right.
Doesn't when they have the proper liturgy service,
yeah,
once a month, where we have a priest come down from Shrewsbury,
yeah,
or Shrewsbury, depending on how you want to do it, there's bits of it in Greek.
Are there?
And
that's the divine liturgy.
Yeah,
that service. Yeah,
yeah. And the service we do when we're not able to get a priest, it's called typica, and it's kind of like a priest-free version that the congregation can do among themselves, and it's very homespun and authentic feeling, and it just feels right. It feels good.
And does it do you sort of zone in and out, because it goes on, yes, quite a long time, doesn't it?
Yes, you zone in and out.
Yeah,
and you're suddenly uplifted, and then you're back in the moment. There's no hymn sheets. There's no service sheet. There's deliberately so. You're meant to pay attention to what's going on. They'd rather you were only half aware of what was going on than spent your time looking at a hymn sheet or an order of service, which I think is another interesting difference between C of E and Orthodoxy. So you have to learn the stuff in time.
Yes. I'd say that what inevitably you're missing is the singing.
Yeah, if I want that, I can just pop along to the cathedral, do an even song.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant as in Orthodox singing, like Russian.
Oh, no, the service is chanted. You mean the proper stuff.
I mean the beautiful music that transports you to another place.
I will look forward to attending the churches that are able to offer that on a higher level. But it's just like the difference between being in a tiny parish church and going to a big cathedral for the professional choir. I mean, once I know what's going on, I can go anywhere. There's a good one in Bath, and I want to go up to Shrewsbury as well. There's lots in London. And imagine what holidays to Greece would become like once I'm part of the church and able to go and do communion and things like that. That'd be amazing.
Be great for you. Wouldn't be popular with the wife, I don't think.
No, she'd go off and have a look at shops or whatever it is.
She'd do is buy more of those plates with satires with enormous phalluses on them and things. That's what you buy.
We are way past the stage of buying more crap to fill the house. Yeah. You know, we are definitely the let's get rid of stuff stage of life rather than the acquiring more crap.
One doesn't like to acknowledge it too often, but we are definitely not as young as we used to be.
Mm.
And going through...
As last week taught me with my back.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I haven't been hunting for a while. Because I started the season with a cold or whatever, EMF attack or 5G attack or something, and it wasn't a good way. It's not a good way to go out doing a sort of hazardous activity when you need to be. Global warming is a massive con. There is no evidence whatsoever that man-made climate change is a problem, that it's going to kill us, that we need to amend our lifestyle in order to deal with it. It's a non-existent problem. But how do you explain this stuff to your normie friends? Well, I've just brought out the revised edition, my 2012 classic book, Watermelons, which captures the story of how some really nasty people decided to invent the global warming scare in order to fleece you, to take away your freedoms, to take away your land. It's a shocking story. I wrote it, as I say, in 2011, actually, the first edition came out. And it's a snapshot of a particular era. The era when the people behind the climate change scam got caught red-handed, tinkering with the data, torturing till it screamed, in a scandal that I helped christen ClimateGate. So I give you the background to the skullduggery that went on in these seats of learning where these supposed experts were informing us, we've got to act now. I rumbled their scam. I then asked the question, okay, if it is a scam, who's doing this and why? It's a good story. I've kept the original book pretty much as is, but I've written two new chapters, one at the beginning and one at the end, explaining how it's even worse than we thought. I think it still stands up. I think it's a good read. Obviously I'm biased, but I'd recommend it. You can buy it from jamesdellingpole.co.uk/shop. You'll probably find that one. Just go to my website and look for it, jamesdellingpole.co.uk. And I hope it helps keep you informed and gives you the material you need to bring round all those people who are still persuaded that, oh, it's a disaster, we must amend our ways and appease the gods, appease Mother Gaia. No, we don't. It's a scam. Whatever, EMF attack or 5G attack or something. And it wasn't a good way. It's not a good way to go out doing a sort of hazardous activity when you need to be
full of
spirit. Mm. And so I got to a wrong start, and then I sort of came off on a sticky rail and injured myself slightly, and I haven't been doing much since. And what happens periodically? Because it is so shit scary, you do get periods where you lose your nerve, and you know that courage is a wasting asset, and you absolutely cannot afford to lose your nerve, because in order to perform well, the horse needs to know that the person sitting astride it is all up for doing this stuff. He yeah. doesn't want somebody to go, oh, I'm not sure whether I want to jump that thing. Because the horse is going to, he's relying on you to be with it and not
mess
it up.
There must be a psychic connection between horses and the rider, more than just what you're communicating via your knees to the horse.
Well, also they can feel through, yeah, they feel everything. They know, yeah. they know your heartbeat. They know exactly how.
It's more like Avatar than we want to admit.
It's been so
long. You know when they
put
their strands, they connect to the beasties that they ride with their dreadlocks, and they blend them in and they join, and it becomes a live feed between them. I've come up with a theory, which I think applies to horses. But you know when, say, a lurcher comes up to you, and
I get a big stick and I just
okay, let's go for a working cocker.
Yeah, yeah.
And they come up and they want attention.
Yeah.
And they scratch their ears, yeah?
Yeah.
And you scratch behind their ears and they absolutely love that. How do you know they love that? I think it's because it's not just that. I think it's because you're feeling it yourself. And there's a little psychic link going on there. You know how good it feels to be scratched behind the ear on the dog because you're getting direct feedback from them. And that's why we're so happy to stroke and scritch dogs, because it's kind of like a mutual pleasure thing. You're getting your own ear scritched by scritching the dog's ear. And I think that's how it must work with horses.
I think you get an oxytocin release, don't you, when you spend time petting an animal?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that coming off as a hormone from the dog?
No, from you.
You are generating this thing because of the animal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a scientific thing, is it?
Yeah. I mean, insofar as we can trust any science.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I think that's. Yeah. I like scratching horses between their ears and the back of their ears and stroking their nose and stuff.
Yeah, and how do you know they like that a lot?
Well,
they can't tell you.
Well, because they'll pull away if they don't like it.
Hmm.
They quite like having you blow gently across their nostrils, although somebody did that in the stables which I go to, and he had a chunk of his mouth bitten off. Bitten. So, not all horses.
That's not even funny.
No, he's fine. He's still good looking, and he hasn't been. It's just a bit of a scar there, but
right. Like no, a Johnny
I learned Flynn this
scar.
The other day. Do you know how horses when they come up to you?
Mm-hmm.
You're standing. I've already done this on another podcast, but I'll tell you, Dick, because you haven't heard it yet. You stand on the edge of the field, and the horse mm-hmm. looks at you, and you think, "When's the horse going to come and see me? What do I need to do?" But you just wait, and the horse will come and see you. And then the horse will go like this. He'll go, and that's your sign that he's accepted you. It's time. Looks down, lowers his head, and goes like that. And so,
isn't that how the griffin goes in Harry Potter?
I think maybe.
When you're meant to greet the griffin and he has to defer, and that's the point at which he's accepted your presence.
Oh, well, they've obviously learned that.
She must have lifted it. Or lifted whoever it. Wrote the Harry Potter books must have lifted it from actual horse law.
So you reciprocate by mirroring the horse's behaviour.
Right,
so you
yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Okay.
And you don't look them in the eyes.
Well, it's also why they say that people who don't like cats always end up with a cat on their lap, because the cat will walk into a room and everyone who wants the cat is staring at the cat saying, "Come over to me, come over to me." And the person who doesn't like cats goes, "Oh, the bloody cat." And they look away. And that to the cat is saying, "I've deferred to you." And so obviously they choose that person. They're not just being arseholes.
Although
and by the way, my New Year's resolution is to swear less. So there goes that one.
Well, that's not... I wouldn't say that's a particularly bad swear word.
It's more the effing and jeffing that I've got to stop. And I find at work, it is just every other word. Certainly in my colleagues, I notice it a lot more now I've decided to stop doing it myself. But just using it for emphasis. And it's so commonplace now. And neither of us... particularly swear in front of our parents, do we? Certainly not in front of mother. She doesn't
never
like it.
Never in front of mother.
No.
She hates it.
Mm.
We wouldn't dare.
But it's a generational thing, isn't it? They didn't swear the way we do. It's one of the new ways in which society is more shit.
Well, one occasionally met sort of upper class fathers who like to drink and smoke and swear as part of their personality, because they were characters.
Yeah,
but yeah, I can't remember whether we used to swear quite a lot as children. And the reason I know this is because I remember we went skiing once, and some people described us, they'd seen us on the slopes, and they described us to our parents, and they said something like, "Yes, they're good skiers, but they swear an awful lot," something like that. and that stuck with me, and I thought, gosh, do we swear?
Right.
Anyway,
one of our standout features.
Yeah, I know. I like the idea that I might have been a good skier once, because that
yeah, I'll take that.
I haven't been skiing for... Do you know how much it costs now to go a lift pass to go skiing?
No, how much?
Apparently, it's about £100 a day.
Seems about right. I mean, it wasn't cheap back when we went. I mean, as a wealthy middle class family when we were kids, it was not the norm to go skiing every winter and summer holiday every summer. And then when we got to the stage where we might have had to pay for it ourselves, it was getting more commonplace. But I should imagine, pound for pound and with inflation, it's got to have got cheaper.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
And they all wear helmets.
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
We were at school at a time where no one wore helmets for cricket. Remember that?
Do they
now? We skied at school. Oh, yeah. It's all helmets everywhere.
Is it?
Safety, James. Safety first.
I would feel a bit weirded out because it's one more damn thing to buy.
I don't think you wear one when you're fielding. But yeah.
Thinking about it, maybe I would have enjoyed.
You'd want a helmet.
I would have hated cricket slightly less if we'd been allowed. If everyone had got to have really big padded gloves,
yeah,
not just the wicket, but the outfield as well.
If we were all dressed like wicket keepers,
because when you catch a cricket ball, it hurts. So I made sure I was nowhere near that bloody ball.
I think you and I had the same approach to cricket. Be positioned as far out whilst fielding as possible.
Yeah.
And make daisy chains.
Make daisy chains. And some people would take exception to this. But
some people just didn't see it as taking part in the sport.
Yeah.
But those daisy chains aren't going to make themselves.
They're not going to make themselves.
And when you adorn yourself with it and make a lovely little bonnet out of it, you're not going to get that without a lot of hard work, are you?
You're not. Do they not for rugger, do they wear hats?
I don't know. I had a daughter at school last of all, and I don't think either of our sons were particularly sporty, so I don't know what they get up to with their sports protection.
I would like to go skiing again.
I'd love to go skiing. I think I've probably still got it.
Should we have
Although the idea of falling over hard at speed.
Can we do
not into soft snow?
Can we do a brother skiing holiday? Because
how the hell would we get away with that?
No, you answered my question. But our wives don't ski.
Yes, but we could sell it to them on a lovely, beautiful alpine walking holiday for them, maybe. I don't know. I have to give it some thought. You see, my wife won't even do hot countries. She doesn't like it when it's over 20 degrees.
So, and it's not as though they're not going to ban us from travel soon and put us all in gulags. But unfortunately, you and I are both married to women who don't know that. They think it's all going to be
won't
normal.
Won't acknowledge it, yeah.
They think in 20 years' time, you're still going to be able to go on holiday. And there's not going to have been a Third World War in the hot stage of the Third World War in the meantime. And that probably...
Hey, we're both in call-up age. No, actually, it's only for reservists, isn't it? But the idea that people our age could be out there. We could be werewolves.
I thought the werewolves were the young ones.
No, I think that's because they're old and grizzled. I think it's the very young and the very old, but the werewolf bit comes from the grizzled old grey things.
I find it so hard to think about World War II now that I know that we were the baddies and that we started it. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to watch that the tiger, the tank thing. Is it good?
We're talking, dear listener, about the film that the German version is called, is it Der or Das Tiger, right?
Yeah.
Translates as The Tank. So
that's,
obviously,
that's
it, which,
rubbish,
it would
it?
Be Panzer translates as tank. The whole point is that it's a tiger.
Yeah.
But the scenes of the fighting the tiger and the way they do it and the relying on the captain and the loader is there, the driver. They've all got their very specific roles, which is very well filmed. And the loading of the gun, the timing of the shot and all that, you know, the visibility, all of that to me feels good and correct and authentic. There's bits that are very dubious.
Right.
But as it's a bit like what was the one with the Fury?
Fury.
Elements
which,
of it.
Which was a bit
good.
Shit, wasn't it?
It was a bit shit, but there's elements that were, you know, you couldn't help enjoying, you know, in a commando comic style enjoyment.
Right.
But this one was like a German version of. There's very much undertones of Heart of Darkness thing, Apocalypse Now. It's that kind of a journey into darkness. And instead of it being a boat going up the Mekong Delta or whatever,
it's a tank.
It's the Eastern Front in a tiger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's worth watching. And I managed to get Lydia to watch it with me. So, yeah, that was a win. There must have been nothing else on that night.
As is so often the case these days, we've got the stage...
All the channels in the world, and yet there's nothing.
No, because Netflix is just basically cabal propaganda.
Hmm.
And it's ditto all the other channels.
Yeah.
We started watching the Marty Scorsese thing on Apple TV.
What's the name?
I can't remember. It's probably got Scorsese in
it. We're rubbish at this TV review thing, aren't we?
No, it's a series of interviews with Martin Scorsese about with lots of footage from his childhood and from the films, and it's quite interesting. In that you realise you did come from a really, really, really poor background on the mean streets of Brooklyn or wherever the Italians lived when he was growing up. And you're rooting for him to become successful. And it's quite interesting seeing he becomes very successful and instantly goes on this massive cocaine kind of whatever bender with the guy, Robbie Robinson from the band, Robbie Robertson. Anyway.
Vaguely know. As a musician now, I've just got to nod sagely. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Robbie.
Yeah. But then it froze, so we couldn't watch that. So we ended up hiring a film. And we hired... Have you ever seen In the Heat of the Night?
No.
I thought I'd seen it because it sounds like the sort of film that you would have seen it, because it's a famous film about a black. I mean, the premise is quite amusing. This murder has been committed in small town Mississippi. This body is found.
I thought it was a New Orleans thing. No, well, I know New Orleans is Mississippi, but I thought it was a deep south thing.
A bit like the ones in Live and Let Die. They're all sort of good old boys, and the only black people you see are working on the cotton plantations, and they know their place and etc. And the police go around looking for somebody to arrest, and the deputy drives to the train station to see who's there and finds this black man sitting waiting, and so instantly arrests him because he's black, because he obviously did it.
Mm.
He takes him back to the station, and it turns out that this black man is actually from the Philadelphia Police Department, and it is this very experienced and distinguished detective who is the best murder solver in Philadelphia, and he's played by Sidney Poitier, and the sheriff is played by Rod Steiger. So it's this sort of double act between this racist police sheriff and this more sophisticated urban black man and it's about the clash of personalities. It's good, although you can tell it's part of the... What one looks at it through two lenses. There's the lens of enjoying the film for what it was, and it's a very good film on that. It works very well dramatically, but then there's the... Why did they make this film? What was the real purpose of it? And it's designed to show the Deep South as racist. It's a liberal fantasy about this super sophisticated black man who's really, really good at solving crime, and he puts these hicks in their place, you know. So it's pushing all the agendas
narrative back then, did we? You know, how this fits in with the narrative. They've been on it for a long, long time, haven't they?
They've been on it since forever. I mean, look, when you think that most of the lynching photographs, those grainy sort of sepia photographs you see supposedly from newspapers that talk about all the lynchings of black people, they're fake. The
whole strange fruit thing.
Billy Holiday was probably a man anyway, but
the clue's in the name.
Yeah, exactly. And like Tina Turner. Turner, hmm. Get it? They they didn't want black people to get along with white people because they wanted that tension. So they wanted to stoke up the lynching stories, and everything is fake. Everything. Although I do believe that the Americans did wipe out the Indians, and I think that was horrible. And I do think they wiped out the buffalo in order to stop the Indians having a food source. Right. I mean, the bad people have been getting away with murder for so long, I was thinking about this, how when we were kids we used to think, well, the white Americans are the goodies and the red Indians are the baddies because they go
and they scalp you and they're savages.
They scalp you and they're horrible.
Yeah.
And you want them to die. And now I'm thinking, well, that's not true. They weren't the baddies. They were just trying to live.
Live their best lives.
Live their best lives. Yeah. So all culture's been ruined for us, really, hasn't it? There's not much one can enjoy that's...
No, and it's sad because we always assumed also that justice would prevail. And if there was a wrong, ultimately it would be put right. And I see a lot of people on our social media platforms who go, don't worry, one day Matt Hancock will be brought to justice for what he's done. It's like, well, don't hold your breath. These people have been getting away with it for decades. They're going to continue to do so. Don't expect any heads to roll over the whole COVID thing.
We shouldn't gloat, Dick. But as Christians, we do know that Matt Hancock ain't going to have a very happy afterlife. Come on.
No. But it would be really nice to see him get an inkling of it in this life, wouldn't it?
I don't know. No, I just leave it. Leave that one to God.
Yeah.
I sort it out. Do you remember talking about how different we were when our greatest ambition was to do a Dick and James go to Israel? When we were sort of, I suppose we might even have been Zionists. We might have been quite sort of.
I don't think we'd have been dead set against the idea.
No, we wouldn't have balked at the accusation that we were Zionists. Toby Young and Alison Pearson and co. still boast about it and think it's great.
Yeah. But they're the people who still think it's aligned with Christianity, that, they. God's chosen people, and they love the Christians like their long lost brothers, and
yet listened to my podcast about the Noahide laws?
Is this the one, not the Rasputin one?
No. I've done a podcast with this
the one you were telling me about the other weekend,
Jewish husband and wife. She technically, according to the strict codes of Judaism, is not Jewish because only her father was Jewish, not her mother.
Yeah, it's got to be a mother, hasn't it?
But this chap is properly Jewish, and he was a Zionist, and he spent time living in Israel, and they both had this wake up moment where they realized that the stuff that the Jews actually believe, at least the kind of the, say, 80% of the Israel population, for example, and Chabad, which pushes this particular hardcore version of Judaism, is that it's at least as bad as anything that the Muslims say about Kufar, that we are. We are basically, our job as goy is to act as their kind of cattle slaves. When finally their sort of Jewish supremacist state is takes over the world, our job is just to be slaves.
We're toast.
And the Noahide laws, which are now George H.W. Bush, George Bush's father, actually embedded this in the U.S. legal system. Although I think at the moment it has a sort of ceremonial function than anything else. I don't think it's currently enforceable. But the Noahide laws were named, I mean, I think named after Noah. But they, there are seven Noahide laws, and on the surface that they say things that you wouldn't disagree with, like thou shalt not kill, I think, and be nice to people and stuff. But there's one about worshipping false idols, worshipping idols, idolatry of any sort. It prohibits idolatry. And which is fine when you think, well, okay, I'm not going to worship
Baal.
Golden calves or whatever. But no, the people who decide what constitutes idol worship are specialist Jewish judges in the Noahide courts. And these specialist Jewish Noahide judges have already decided that Christianity definitely counts as idol worship. And the penalty for this idol worship under Noahide laws is
death.
Death by beheading.
Right.
It's kind
so the
of...
The idolatry comes in as crucifixes and icons and things like that. Hmm.
And worshipping this Jesus character who is apparently not, you know, he's not the same as the one God.
Not kosher.
So this has slightly tested my faith in the innocence and innocuousness of Judaism, which is a post-Christian invention. You know, it's essentially medieval. The Talmudic, this is what this woman was telling me, Yana Benin. She was explaining to me that a lot of Christians think that Judaism is just Christianity minus Jesus, and a lot of Christians think, well, it's basically the Bible minus the New Testament, but it's not even that. It's the sayings of these various rabbis from sort of Christ time to through to the sort of Middle Ages, who really hate Jesus and hate Christians more than anything, and have invented this religion based on sort of ancient Babylon and the Babylonian mystery religions.
Has that podcast gone out yet?
Yeah.
Right.
It's gone out to subscribers. I don't think we've it's gone on general release yet.
Right. Well, I'm catching up slowly, so I will get on to it.
Yeah.
Well, we started on time today. That's really good going. And we don't normally run much over an hour.
No, we don't.
But
is it time for it? I've been supposed not to have caffeine because apparently another of my battery of alternative people who've been treating me, Sonia, my homeopathy person, tells me that my adrenals are overloaded and that caffeine stresses my adrenals. So I find it very difficult not to have a cup of tea in the afternoon.
I've sent my friend Pete from one of the market stalls in Worcester to... He had really bad eczema, so I sent him to go and see the acupuncturist who sorted me out. And today I saw him in town. And I saw Michelle, actually. She was in the Sweet Greeks Cafe where I went to have my coffee and baklava.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very good baklava.
What was she eating?
I didn't see. No, I didn't see, so I can't report back on that. But anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is... sending my friend off to see my acupuncturist, who completely cured me of really appalling eczema. As you remember, it was like weeping open sores on my arms. And he was reporting back. He'd never had acupuncture before. And he said, Dick, you had one over on me, didn't you? You knew he was where he was going to put needles. And he was telling me the various places he had to be needled. And I said, he didn't do that to me at all, Pete. I'm sorry. I couldn't believe it. And he's had me off various foods, which he's been doing via a pendulum.
Yeah.
Can he have this food? Can he have that food? And he's taken away his bacon. And he said he must have known I'd just been to the shop because he was almost going through the list of the things I'd just bought. I've got a fridge full of bacon and ham. What am I going to do with that?
Do you know, on the subject of pendulums and things, do you know about auto-dowsing?
Is that doing it to yourself?
Yeah.
No, I don't know about auto-dowsing. Is it demonic? Or is it, doesn't it worry you, this sort of thing, slightly?
Dick, this is exactly it. And I think we're going to get a sort of mixed bag of responses from Christians, which is to say, who is telling you to, is this an inbuilt quality that God has given us that we should use because our instincts tell us? And our psychic powers tell us, or is it because outside dark forces are working on us and giving us information to which we should not be privy? I don't know the answer. I really don't. It's a tricky
one.
Well,
Saint Paisios would have said, if you've got doubts about it, you should ignore, because if it's from God, he will find other ways of telling you.
Right.
He will come back again and tell you in another way, which is an interesting angle. But surely the demonic can also do the same. I don't know. It's a tricky one because, you know, the Christian faith healing is a thing. If Saint Paisios can cure cancer, then
also,
doing these things is possible.
Do you remember the scene in the Bible? I think this always comes back to me. The scene where the disciples come up to Jesus. They say, Jesus, this guy over there, he's been curing people. He's been casting out spirits. And
in your name.
In your name. And Jesus is like, well, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
If there's... what are you worrying? I mean, I forget how it goes exactly.
Yeah, he does go... And your problem being?
Yeah, exactly. So it's very tricky because it's clear that those of us who've... I'm glad we're talking about this because I've been worrying about this and I meant to talk to you about it.
Mm.
Once you understand that God made us and made the world, and you marvel at all the natural cures that he's given us in, mm-hmm. like your favorite dandelions,
yeah,
but stuff that's available on our doorstep, anyone can get hold of this stuff and it's really good and it works better than big pharma stuff. Oh, by the way, can I give you an example of this? Do you ever get ulcers?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you remember when we dear viewer and listeners, Dick and I used to be plagued by ulcers, mouth ulcers as children, get them all the time. And I think our parents did as well. And there was Bongella, which mm-hmm. stung and didn't stay in place. It was this it was
taste of aniseed.
But it would sting and you'd feel it work for a while and then it wouldn't, but the ulcer would last. And then there was this stuff called Adcortil in Orobase, which was sort of brown gritty stuff that our father used to use. And it was, I think it was prescription only. And because it was gritty, it used to stick to your, the inside of your lip much better. And that sort of got rid of the ulcer after a few days generally. And I wondered whether this stuff was still going, and it isn't. You can't get it anymore. It's been banned. But I discovered that it's a steroid. So we were taking this stuff, which is a steroid, to get rid of our, which I'm sure steroids are not good. Anyway, I wanted to go. I had a nasty mouth ulcer the other day, and I wanted to get rid of it, obviously. So I looked up natural cures for ulcers, and the number one one was a teaspoon of sea salt, swill it round your mouth. And number two was coconut oil. You slosh it round your mouth for about 10 minutes, and it's antiseptic. and antibacterial, etc. Anyway, I did this, and within 2 days, the ulcer had gone. So one didn't need to get big pharma's Adcortil in Orobase or the lesser Bongella. Anyway, I'm just illustrating that there are all these wonders, these natural wonders, which God has given us free because he loves us and he wants to make the world, you know, a nice place and stuff. And meanwhile, Big Pharma has invented all these or created all these petroleum-based poisonous products.
Lots of treatments, no cures.
Yeah, lots of treatments, no cure. What am I saying here? So if God has given us all these wonderful substances in nature, and if he's made us in his own image with things like a pineal gland, which gives us psychic abilities, does his rule book include using this auto-dowsing thing or not?
Right.
Does he disapprove or not? And I really, really don't know. And I don't even know whether...
I don't think there's an easy answer to
nobody
this,
in the Church of England would know, that's for certain.
No.
You kind of need somebody like Elder Paisios, somebody blessed with this special connect. This is why the elders in the Orthodox Church are so useful, because they have a kind of connection to this sort of the numinous, I think. Can I tell you how to auto-dowse anyway?
Okay.
So you stand up with your hands by your side and find a kind of neutral position, yeah? So palms facing your side and you just relax. And when you're in a kind of relaxed state, you then ask yourself a question or make a statement about yourself. So my name is Dick. And what you'll find is that you will, in my case, I find my body slumping, moving forward, moves onto the balls of your feet. When I say my name is Wendy, I find myself going back. So you establish your tell. So forward is something true, back is something that's not true. So then you might be wondering whether you should eat some bacon, whether it's good for you or not. So you could either just imagine that, you know, should I have some bacon, and you'll go either forward or back. Or if you want to kind of make it more, well, I don't know, does it work better? Maybe hold a bit of bacon in your hand. I mean, you can do it for things like...
If someone comes in right then and asks, what the hell are you doing?
But
auto-dowsing some bacon.
Give it a go on some harmless things where you don't think God's going to be bothered either way anyway.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting. I mean, I'm not sure whether... Because the temptation would be then to start using it for life decisions. Like, should I go be a monk on Mount Athos?
Yeah.
But
I'm sure I partially rocked forward on that one.
Yeah.
One last question.
Yeah.
I've started from the beginning again because I've now got my Orthodox study Bible, which has got lots of notes explaining all the weird stuff that you never even gave any thought to the first couple of readings of the Bible. It never quite covers where Cain's wife came from. I know it's one of the oldest questions, but how has that ever been explained to you? When Cain got married after killing Abel, he went off and had a family. Where did his wife come from?
I think there were more people around than we're told, than gets mentioned. So Cain wasn't the only person on Earth at that time.
Well, there's Adam and Eve for a start.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like a fuller explanation from someone.
There are complications. Like, one has to be aware that there's a lot of incest in the early days, because when you've only got Adam and Eve, and their offspring, inevitably they're going to be sleeping with their brothers and sisters, aren't they?
Yeah, like Lot and his kids.
Yes, I agree. They're a bit, they're a, yeah, Lot's daughters.
Yeah, I think that's quite a biggie though, isn't it? And I don't want it to destroy my faith, but and I always accept there's going to be big things in the Bible that we're not going to get straight away. If it was that easy, then everyone would have faith, because everything would have an explanation. But there are some more obvious questions, and there are some more vaguely sort of esoteric sort of questions. But this seems to me quite a biggie.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's things like, how did Noah get all the different animals in the ark, and how did he know how to create sort of vivariums for various creatures? Because I mean, some of them are going to want hot, dry.
Yeah.
Some of them, I mean, like we kept lizards.
Yeah.
We had infrared lamps and stuff, and it was quite, you know, you had to create a terrarium, didn't you? They all have different requirements. Like, you've got salamanders.
Didn't have glass back then.
Salamanders need keeping moist underneath the...
I don't think moisture was going to be a problem in the flood.
No, that's true. That's true. But the hot and dry animals might have had a...
Yeah.
So, like, the lizards that go...
Yeah.
On the sand.
That's because they're so hot.
Yeah.
They're not going to worry about that, are they? Mind you, we don't know how hot it was, do we? I mean,
no,
it might
don't.
Have been wet. It definitely was wet, but it might not have been cold.
Boat building must have been pretty sophisticated, mustn't it, to be able to create...
Boat stroke terrarium.
And nobody else, nobody else would have been helping him.
Because they were Shem, Ham and Japheth.
Yeah, but that's only still only four.
And their wives.
I don't think the wives would have been involved in boat building.
No, but they would have been good at lizard keeping.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, given the absence of help, because everyone else would be going, why? You're building a what? Yeah. An ark? Life's going on. There's not going to be any flood or anything.
Yeah, obviously. I think how many people it would take on Tyneside to build something that big and how long that would take. And then you have to get the unions involved.
Yeah. Are you talking about that the aircraft carrier that's going to get sunk by one drone in about 5 years?
the one we share with France?
Yeah, that's going to be the next sort of YOY headline in the mail, isn't it? Why didn't we see this coming? Well, we did, actually. We did actually see it. It was completely bloody pointless.
Yeah.
It built this white... It's like the Mary Rose, built in order to be sunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's probably a conversation for another day.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Right. Well, it's time for both of us to have a lovely guilt-free cup of tea.
I know. I would like, and I'm not going to get, and I shouldn't be craving, is polenta cake. Do you have cake?
Not at this time. I had my baklava this afternoon earlier on, and that was lovely, and that's what I'm going to limit myself to.
So you're not fasting today?
Yeah, technically I'm fasting, but I was recommended not to go full on for the full Greek Orthodox, effectively vegan fast. Vegan plus prawns.
Veganism, I think... is an abomination, and
it is an abomination. But it's only the closest description we can get to what the Orthodox diet is supposed to be. It's meat and dairy free before veganism was a thing. So, in fact, you can eat prawns. It's an odd one.
What, on the vegan diet?
Yeah, but I'm the one who would use the term vegan.
It's an easy way
of describing it.
On your butter products and things free day, you can yet eat prawns.
Yeah.
So you could have garlic prawns with...
Yep, but I'd have to use... I've worked out avocado oil would be a good one, because olive oil is out.
But you can use avocado oil?
Yeah, because it wasn't a thing back then. I know these are all technicalities. are. I didn't make the rules. They were made about 2,000 years ago. And that's what I like about it, you see? What? Are you mocking my religion?
You tucking into your... Oh, I'm going to have a fast today. I'm going to have...
Garlic
king
prawns.
Garlic king prawns, but they're cooked in avocado oil. So I'm all right. I'm still fasting. Yeah.
Well, it's the way it is.
It's the way it is. Are you?
I don't make the rules.
Good.
So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one.
It's going to be tough.
My prawn intake might go through the roof.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Good.
All right. Well, enjoy a cup of tea. And do I need to say anything else? Yep. Subscribe to me and pay me and, you know, help me. Because I'm not going to help myself, am I? I'm useless. If you want to support me.
You definitely need help.
I do. Send me, you know, subscribe. Otherwise,
and you can buy you a cup of coffee and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Thank you, Nick. Okay. Right. Bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
Stop record. Stop.